This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The future is what you make of it.
Just know that supplies are limited.
Good morning, Desert Bluffs.
I'm Hal Lublin. Hello, I'm your friendly neighborhood Steve Carlsberg.
My name is Meg Bashwinner, and I play the role of Deb, a sentient patch of haze who hates you.
And I'm Symphony Sanders, who plays Tamika Flynn, and I care for you and will protect you at all costs. And we are here to talk to you about Welcome to Night Vale. Why do we do it? Because we like it. And because we like you. And because we are our jobs. And mainly we like to talk about this show. It's true, we are, right? I even have it tattooed on my body. You know, we enjoy our jobs and we enjoy this podcast. And you enjoy this podcast. And so let's talk about it together, huh? And this episode is 19B, the other Sandstorm.
Still Sandstorm. Yeah, it's my job to read the description, but I do want to walk back. I don't think that Deb hates you. I think that she just, she doesn't. Hates too strong of a word for Deb. I don't think that she would has enough emotion about you to even ascribe hate to it. So she just others you.
She doesn't. Yeah, she just doesn't.
She doesn't care enough to hate you.
She doesn't care about you, which I think is more hurtful.
I do. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't care about hurting you. She cares right. about you maybe buying the product she's selling.
Yeah. True salesperson.
Yeah. But I just wanted to clarify because I just don't. Yeah. I feel like it's important to get Deb right. I think we owe that to her. All right. This is this episode description. A dangerous sandstorm threatens Desert Bluffs, plus baseball opening day, a look at financial news, and Kevin finds himself in a strange new place. And we all find ourselves in a strange new place because we're in Desert Bluffs, y'all.
Crazy times.
I've been waiting for this for one reason. And if we've already done this and I forgot, then I've blown it all. Have we talked about the Yellow Deli yet?
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
We've talked about the Yellow Deli twice.
Well, comedy, it's time for a third time. Because this music reminded me of the friggin' Yellow Deli. I immediately started thinking about sourdough bread and submissive women. Who are maybe in a cult, like, kidnapping situation. You cannot really tell, but they are not allowed to talk to you.
Oh, it's for sure a cult.
Yeah, it's for sure a cult.
They kind of talk to you. They take your order.
Yeah, the music sounds like it comes directly out of the Yellow Deli. Am I the only one who felt that way?
No, I agree. Like, the theme song sounded like...
Now that you mention it.
Yeah, it was like that for me, but it was also that feeling of... that old Saturday Night Live skit with the sweaty balls thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
When they were just like,
the NPR, yeah, good the delicious
times,
dish.
Great times. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, that was good times. And just like, there should be like really sense. It's really sensitive, like adult contemporary music on. Everybody's having a really bland beige time, you know?
Yeah, well, the music is covered by known Yellow Deli cult member Joseph Fink. So that's it's him plucking those dulcet tones away, contemplating his future sister wives.
But you're the first one. You're the first one. So you're the boss of all the other sister wives.
Yeah, I'm a natural leader, so I probably would take on a leadership role in this sister wife whiffery.
Whiffery.
The sister whiffery.
We're whiffering all over the place, all of us.
Yeah, well, the last episode, someone said that the Desert Bluffs was a a metaphor for Mormonism. So
there you go.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah.
Mormons are all very nice.
Yeah. Polygamy, it's in the air. It's in the air.
They don't do that anymore. They don't do that anymore.
Oh, they still so totally do. Maybe it's not like their official thing, but there's definitely Mormons with sister wives still happening.
No, I do. I'm aware of that because I know that they have reality shows. But they're like the whole of Mormonism, the Church of Latter-day Saints, they don't condone it anymore.
No, they do a ton of Diet Coke. A lot of Diet Coke being drank. The caffeine-free Diet Coke.
Caffeine-free, yeah, because they can't have, yeah.
I basically live a Mormon existence. I'm very similar.
They get married very young so that they can do it and stuff.
They can do what?
So they can have babies and do it, because they're not allowed to do it before that.
Yeah.
No, and they wear special underpants. They wear special underpants.
Is that true?
So do I, to be fair.
Yeah, they do. They do. They wear a special undergarment.
I wear a husky male underwear that's fortified and very comfortable.
Speaking of adult underwears, I got a box, like a couple boxes of some adult poise pads incorrectly delivered to my apartment. And it wasn't addressed to me. It was just like the block down, but my same apartment.
It was addressed to your pseudonym?
It was placed in front of my door. So I just brought it into my house and didn't even look at it because I order a bunch of stuff from Amazon all the time. And I just like opened it and it was a bunch of like poise pads that I had to sneak and return over to my neighbor down the block.
But isn't it great that the internet exists so people can now order their poise pads without having to feel embarrassment at the CVS?
Yes. I think it's wonderful. You can get anything on the internet these days.
They still have embarrassment because their neighbors are opening their mail, but it's got to be less than the...
Because it's just embarrassment with one person. And you don't have to see them. Go ahead, Hal.
I just, very quickly, because you just described a situation where you saw a package, you grabbed it, assuming it was yours, and you opened it up and returned it.
Because it was in front of my door.
It was incorrectly left at your door. I would like to take a moment to address the person in my apartment complex who, while I've been sick the last week and a half, and my poor dear wife, who's in the other room right now, also was sick. And she came up one day and was like, sweetheart, there's a giant box of Bounty paper towels that got delivered to us. I had ordered them. I said, okay, I'll go get them tomorrow. Well, we were both sick tomorrow. We did not get them. But when she went down the following day, they were gone. And whoever you are who stole our paper towels, I know you also listen to this podcast. It is impossible that you do not. I refuse to live in a world where you don't. You will be hunted down like the dog you are. And I got Amazon to replace the paper towels. So joke's on you. I still have my paper towels. And soon I'll have your paper towels too. I'm taking you to court.
I think they were betting on the fact that you would call and like Amazon would replace them. But it is rude to take someone else's package. Like if you took it from like downstairs and you knew it wasn't yours, like don't do that. That's not cool. Yeah. But like this was literally delivered to this was outside my door. It was impeding me from getting in my door. So I opened the door and I shoved it inside and I closed the door behind me. A couple days later, I opened the package and I was like, this is not mine. And then I looked at the name and it was poor Myrtle Turton's.
You just put her on blast, huh?
I'm assuming this woman does not know what a podcast.
She definitely listens to this podcast. She writes in all the time to the show. And she's like, I'm Symphony's neighbor. And I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm a big supporter of what you're doing. And I would hate to ever be put on blast about my bladder control issues. I've taken measures to protect my underwear.
No shame. No shade, Myrtle. But like,
I'm more than a little disappointed that this wasn't a story about how you started recreationally using poise pads. Just like, I decided to try it and I've never felt more free.
Well, because it can harken you back to your baby days.
Sure.
You can have as much Mountain Dew as you want.
Finally, my dream.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I wish, like the time recently, this was this year when I was returning a rental car and I had driven from San Diego to Los Angeles and I got off of the exit and I had to pee so bad and I was at a punishment light that wouldn't change. And so I had to pee in a coffee cup in the rental van. because it was a go no go for launch situation, and that was my option.
Was that the one that the window was busted out of because of that gate that came crashing down on you?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't the busted out minivan.
So for those of you who don't understand how, like, we drive around in cool minivans because we're cool moms, and one horrible underground parking is always a challenge for us because a minivan is not meant to be parked anywhere, and hotels don't care about you or your vehicle. So this one underground, the ceiling was like maybe a solid 10 feet. Okay. Most vehicles are like 6.5 to 7 feet tall, right? And you have the back lifted, you're putting all the stuff in. She was cleaning out the thing and the gate came down because a person was pulling up to it, you know, like sensors do. And it bashed out the window and glass showered all over Meg. So you can imagine how she felt.
It was 6:30 in the morning. Fucking 6:30 in the morning in Vancouver. And I was showered in broken glass. Jeez. And then I was like, well, we got to go to the airport. We're not going to. So we all piled into the van with the broken window and went to the airport. And like that whole day, I was shaking broken glass out of my hair and like out of my sweatshirt and like out of my like self. And then I got to Calgary, took a shower, but I put back on the same jeans. And so I was still like kind of swirling around in broken glass, just like, that stuff is insidious.
Oh my God.
Sounds speaking of insidious, Desert Bluffs.
Yes.
Thank you for bringing it back.
What do you guys think about the corporate structure and Strex itself already permeating every part of these people's lives? Like when the Sunbeams are playing a game, you know, they're playing the baseball game or whatever, and the people that were sitting on the bench, instead of just sitting there waiting to bat, they start doing customer service orders and accounts receivable spreadsheets. What do you think about the permeation of the corporate structure into every part of life in Desert Bluffs?
I think that Desert Bluffs is the Eagleton of the Night Vale universe, in that they do – it's very similar. So Night Vale, you have a city council. You have all this insidious sort of dark, creepy stuff going on. But it almost seems ineffective. It is effective, but it's not – it's like – they're lazy. They get stuck on Facebook. They take vacation. Whereas Desert Bluffs feels like this corporation owns and runs everything. And if you got time to lean, you've got time to clean. So people have like bought into it. And whether it's real or not, they have this cheery veneer about it of this hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go. So they are in that way, the managing force of Desert Bluffs is way better at what they do than Night Vale is. Night Vale is like Bad News Bears, if you want to stick with baseball metaphors instead, where they're like the scrappy team and they're kind of weird and they're kind of out there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're at least overt about how terrible everything is instead of this smiling God, Strex Corp. We're going to – like everything said through a creepy grin. That's my take on it.
Yeah, we're going to very efficiently, very precisely brush it under the rug kind of mentality. See, I'm kind of, I don't know, I love order. I love a spreadsheet. I love structure. And so I'm a little bit draws me into that world. Like the really efficient terribleness. Because it's like, you don't need to be frustrated. At least you don't even need to be frustrated with the inefficiency of how much things are out to get you. At least they're killing you quickly, right?
Right. Yes.
See, I was associating the Strex people with Republicans or the conservatives of this day and age, and Night Vale with the more progressive or whatever. It may not be like the best organized, and we may be fighting amongst ourselves, and things might not be doing great, but at least we're not like, you know, just towing one company line, right, no matter what. But, you know, I feel like Desert Bluffs is way less sinister than the Republicans these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're right.
they seem to be just like at least trying to do some stuff to make sure their stuff runs in order and things happen on time.
One of my favorite parts of Desert Bluffs, the town that I now want to live in, is that they have so many kinds of yogurt stores and pony petting stations. Like, that feels like that's directly aimed at me. I feel like I'm seen, you know? Like, if I could be having my choice of yogurt and my choice of pony petting station, then that's the society I want to live in. Like, that's the... I mean, even if it means that I have to embrace capitalism, there's at least the abundance and the option of different yogurt stores and different pony petting stations. And I think the competition in the market makes for better product overall.
What kind of yogurt do you like? Do you like a flavored yogurt or do you like a plain yogurt that you add a lot of toppings to, a la Yogurtland or Menchie's? What's your pleasure?
Oh, Menchie's. My personal favorite is the 16 Handles. They're mostly just in New York City, although yogurt chains are dying out. And I feel like this is not the first time we've talked about yogurt chains on this show.
Nope.
So
nope.
I'm glad we could get back here. Yeah, I like 16 Handles. I like to make a mashup of yogurts. And then I like to add fruit, strawberries and pineapple and blueberries, and then chocolate chips and a little bit of granola, and then the occasional chocolate covered gummy bear, but just like one or two. And then, yeah, mostly it's just fruit and yogurt for my bucket of sugar, and dairy, but with little chocolate chips.
When you said the chocolate-covered gummy bears, my eyes and mouth fell agape.
Yeah, I love a chocolate-covered gummy bear. But I have restraint at the yogurt bar. One, because the toppings are heavy, and two, physically heavy, and they do it by weight. And two, because if I feel like I'm being virtuous and I have too much candy, it ruins the virtuosity and I should just go get salt and straw.
Well, don't you think when, I don't know, I always feel like I'm being cheated when they have to weigh it. Cause I'm like, no. I'm like, shouldn't you just like, I want scoops, you know? I'm like, give me like 2-3 heaping scoops, you know, for like $5. Cause I feel like I always end up spending like $75 in those places. Cause I'm like, what? I get ice cream and like just some caramel and chocolate and stuff. You got to think about it. This is why I spend so much at Whole Foods on the salads.
I sometimes try to impress myself with what I can spend at the Whole Foods salad bar. It's like, this is one box. How much could we possibly make it weigh? And I really like, you get like a $23 box of Whole Foods. You're like, yes, I'm good. And then eat it all. You're like, I ate, 2.5 pounds of Whole Foods salad bar in one sitting and ate $23 worth of food in one shot that wasn't like served to me at a restaurant or like a delicious steak, but just like a box of vegetables because I got the heavy shit. Because I was like, these sweet potatoes are delicious. Who cares that I'm paying, you know, by the pound for sweet potatoes, which are $1.99 a pound, but I'm paying $7.99 a pound because they're in a salad bar.
Because you don't have to roast them.
I don't have to roast them. And because it's all there for me. And because I work hard, okay? And I deserve to be able to sometimes spend $23 on a box of salad that I eat in one sitting at my desk. Yeah.
I know this has become a section that is popular in the regular Night Vale episodes. So when it comes to Desert Bluff, the poetic section, right? He talks about the sandstorm and Lawrence Levine, which is kind of like Larry Leroy for me. He's like in the outside of town. And he said, and that whole section is very, what do you call it, Meg?
Oh, the high concept prose section?
Yes, high concept prose. I feel that way about that too. And he's talking about like, you know, having the scoops of sand in his hand and then, you know, both soft palms and felt forehands, like one of those foreign gods, a radioactive forearmed deer that seemed to be attracted to the new StrexCorp distribution center. I just thought that was really interesting. And I thought it was beautifully read by Kevin as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is both the Sandstorm episodes were conceived of and the bulk of them were written by Jeffrey, who is the Night Vale's resident poet. He's our poet in residence. So,
and he did know it.
He does show off in these two episodes his knack for the poetic side of things. And Kevin, yeah.
Could we call him a poet laureate?
We'll call him the poet laureate of Night Vale, Jeffrey Cranor.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of feel that with these two episodes that it does take more of a poetic bent, especially when we're getting the financial news, as well as the Larry Leroy section, as well as the commercial for Strex Corp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it's so beautifully written, and it's reminiscent of Night Vale, but off of that, like in a bizarro way, but still feeling very same. Does that make sense? Sometimes I say stuff and I'm like, were those words together or what? And then
it's the doppelganger concept.
Ooh, see, I'm tripping. See, like the Strex Corp thing is similar to the Home Depot, which I call Home Depot. Home Depot. The unfulfilled. Unfulfilled, and then the word for the last one was... Oh, yeah, the word was incomplete. So incomplete versus unfulfilled. Technically, they could mean the same thing in reference to a person, right? Like if you feel incomplete or unfulfilled, it would be a similar feeling.
Right.
But it's still different. It's like synonymous or whatever. It's like synonymous or whatever. I just like that duality because it goes to the bigger structure of these two episodes with the doppelgangers and all that stuff. It's just like the structure is similar, but slightly off, slightly different. The characters are similar, but different in a different way. And I think it'll be interesting when we talk to Kevin about how he came about with his character development on that.
Yeah, I think this is a really fun idea for an episode or episodes, and it probably was fun to write them. And I feel like you do the lion's share of the work writing the first one, and then the second one is just finding a way to mirror that and pull the stuff through that you want to pull through, and then show the opposites, and then also add in new stuff and kind of start building the world of Desert Bluffs as a foil to the world of Night Vale. So yeah, this seems like a fun writer project that Jeffrey did.
Yeah.
Eked two episodes out of it and changed the whole world of the show.
And, you know, with all that, then created this character and this whole other world who maybe still felt not quite in the world of Night Vale. They're like, oh, this is a, like you felt, Meg, this is a world of more order than Night Vale is. So maybe they feel a bit more akin with that as opposed to the tumultuous nature of Night Vale itself.
Yeah. And ponies and yogurt.
Ponies and yoga, y'all.
I'm not like ready to pack my bags and leave Night Vale, but I feel like I could, like I would but maybe for drive and to yogurt. Desert Bluffs. Maybe I'd drive, like, you know, like after work one day, like if I was feeling like it, I could drive there to pet some ponies and get some yogurt and then, you know, engage with the brand of Strex Corp. That's possible.
And maybe wind up there forever.
Maybe wind up there forever.
Who knows?
Yeah, you start there just to get some yogurt. The next thing you know, you're working at the yogurt place. And the next thing you know, you're in the military. Yeah. You're devising a new H-bomb.
Isn't that how they get most people in the military? Just like in real life? Through yogurt shops?
Yeah, it's either the GI Bill or the yogurt shops. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yeah,
it's some guy in the back of like a Forever yogurt being like, hey, kid, do you feel useless? You got any college prospects? Do you play in a band? Come join the army. Actually, did you know I got a call. I was recruited because I was doing choir stuff. They wanted me to be in like, there's like a army choir. And they were like, you don't have to like really fight the way that other people do. I'm like, I don't know about that. Just like, you still have to go through basic training though. And they're like, oh yeah. And I'm like, so no. Thank you.
And given your age, you totally would have been sent to Afghanistan. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have. I would have done one or two tours and not just singing the, you know, Star Spangled Banner. I'll tell you what.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if we talked about this, but they like in my high school, they forced you to meet with the Army recruiter. You're forced to meet with the Army recruiter.
Oh,
and I was like,
what?
I don't want to do this. And my vice principal was like, well, you have to. And so everyone had to have a sit down with the Army recruiter. And so I had my sit down with the Army recruiter and he's like, so what's your future like? And I'm like, well, I would like to do theater. And he was like, we have nothing for you. And I was like, great. Thank you for your service. Got to go. Bye. Like, If any of you have to go to this meeting, just tell them that you're interested in theater and make pretend and rolling around on the floor, and then they won't want you for their army. So
who knew it was that simple?
That's how I got out.
Ours was just hanging out in the lunchroom, had a table, that guy, and then the guy who worked at Great America at Six Flags. Great America, for those of you who don't know, is a amusement park where I am from locally in Gurnee, Illinois. And I chose to go to Great America and work there instead of the army. Also, I'm really bad at when people tell me what to do, so I would not be very good in the army. I'm just going to be honest with them. Like, I'm not who you're looking for. This is not the drone you're looking for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If it wasn't for the murder, I think I'd be good at the army.
I'd be terrible at it. It's too much exercise.
Oh, see, I'd be good at the exercise, the jumping over the walls and sure. shooting stuff. But like, I'm not really good at people telling me what to do and then being like, you just follow this order. I'd be like, nah, bro, I'm a rebel.
Yeah. Not to say that I don't love the troops, because I'm afraid of what would happen to me if I said I didn't love the troops. But when I was kind of formulating my opinions about the army and war and stuff, it was like right when the Iraq war started. I was like 17 and like, George Bush was like bombing the crap out of Iraq for some reason, like some unjustified reason. And so it was like, I kind of tainted my wanting to join the army was the fact that I would have to go kill people for no reason.
Put a damper on it, huh?
I am very grateful for what people in the military are able to do and are willing to commit to for our individual freedoms as we get them here. And I support them because I do have family members that are in the military. I just personally don't think I could do it, but more power to anybody else who is doing it out there in the wide world, possibly listening to us.
But don't kill.
Yeah, we don't want people killed.
Just don't kill people. That's all. The state, I don't know. I'm like very anti the state having the right to kill anyone. But that's another story for another day at Strex Corp. Maybe I don't belong in Desert Bluffs because I feel like Strex Corp would definitely advocate for the state being able to kill people.
Yeah.
I think
then again, so.
So
would Night Vale. So.
Yeah. Night Vale regularly sends people to be killed for various reasons, for like winning contests. It's like not even a punishment. Like sometimes it's like the prize. But isn't the world all about that? I mean, one way or another, we're going to bite the big one. I prefer if we were all nice to each other. I mean, in an ideal world, wouldn't it be nice if we were all nice to each other and didn't have wars and could just be like, hey, man, you make this thing and I make this thing. You want to trade it and not have to worry about like money and stuff and people having just like regular rights. That would be nice. And all things being equal, men and women and every color, and you could love who you want to love. Like all of those things would be dope. Unfortunately, the world as it is. And I don't know if it will be fixed by any of those things that we were just talking about, but I think everybody's out here trying to do their best. Most people. Some people are out here trying to fuck shit up. And you know who you are, Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I just, somewhere along the way, maybe the beginning, people started equating justice with death, that like true justice, in order to carry out justice, that it's an eye for an eye. And if you are coming for my people, then I'm going to come right back for your people. And I think that sullies what the beauty of justice is, and that justice can exist without murder or death. I think that we can, the justice is way more than the finiteness of ending someone's life. And that's not, I'm not advocating for torture by saying that, but I'm saying that the timeline of life is long, and I feel like justice is not something that happens instantaneously.
Yeah. Should we tee up the weather?
Let's tee up the weather now that we've got this big conversation about military and justice.
Got real deep.
I really do love the troops. I do.
Thank you for your service.
I do. Thank you for your service. I really do appreciate it. I'm not trying to negate the This isn't anything that you're doing wrong. It's the men. It's the men in the suits. All right. Go for it.
It's old white men. That's who it is. They're fucking it up for everybody. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, a conversation with the voice of Kevin. Kevin R. Free. But first, a conversation about this episode's weather. This episode's weather is Eliezer's Waltz by Disparition. What a fun change from the first one from
19A. Yeah, so it was Joseph. We wanted to make sure that we had the same song for both episodes, but we didn't. We had very limited resources as to what we had the rights to do a cover of. So again, going with Joseph's dad's song seemed like a slam dunk there. And then John Disparition does a really cool cover of it that he makes it not a waltz anymore, which is a really cool thing to do when you're asked to cover something is to show it in a totally new way.
Leave it to a genius like John.
As American Idol would say, you got to make it your own, you know? And Disparition certainly does that. He's so amazing at being able to adapt things. Even if you look at our theme song, when we asked him to make a theme song for our show to be similar to Night Vale's, but not Night Vale's theme song. And he did, he's just such a genius and just like bangs it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that he's game for this too. But Joseph was like, hey, do you want to try covering this song that my dad wrote? And John was like, yeah, sure. I'll give it a crack. Like it's cool to see someone who's game to try stuff, especially when it comes from a personal place. Like I would be, if I'm not a musician, but if Joseph was like, hey, would you like to cover my dad's song? I would be a little like, oh God, I'd be so nervous. I'd get totally in my head about it. But
yeah.
But John stepped right up.
Yeah. Maybe he did get a little cause anytime you're doing a piece of music that's especially means something to someone else, or it can be something special, you look at it with respect, I imagine. And John is so respectful of other musicians and of other people's work and wants to pay homage to those things that I'd be interested to see what his process was on that. I know we've talked to him in earlier episodes about his process and when, you know, just being around him in general, but he really is amazing how he can be like, oh, this, and then does a riff off of that onto something else. That really just takes a lot of musical talent that I personally do not possess, but that's why he is the Disparish.
Stay right there. Good Morning Night Vale will return after a brief break.
Today we have with us the voice of Kevin, Kevin R. Free.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Meg. Hi, Symphony. Hi, Hal. Hi.
We love you, Kevin.
Thank you so much for joining us. We love you. We really appreciate it.
Love you back. And I appreciate you.
Thanks. We appreciate you joining us today to talk about the sandstorm.
Woo!
Yep.
And then we all start making sandstorm sounds.
We all went back and did a re-listen of the sandstorm. And Kevin, I talked to you today and you're like, I'm re-listening to the episode. What were your reactions listening to it all these years later?
Oh, man. Well, I remember the one choice that I made when I started. And as I when I first did Kevin, the one choice I made was to make sure that I didn't try to lower my voice because I knew that Cecil's voice was really low. So I thought Kevin's voice has to be higher. And then as I listened to Sandstorm today, I thought, I made the choice, but I didn't really go there. I didn't really actually start making Kevin super high until later.
Right.
Until much later. I feel like by the time I did that live show, the Old Oak Doors show, that was when I was like, he's really high, bitch. So as I listened to Sandstorm, I mean my first thought was, I wasn't very good.
Let me stop you there. You're fantastic at it. I think you – and I love that choice that you made, because Kevin comes off as a really great counterpoint to Cecil, for sure, vocally even. But I like the fact that you didn't start at 10 with where your voice was. Like, it's better that it builds over time, because that's – you know, this story, we're in episode 19B, and we don't get to the Old Oak Doors until 46 A and B. So that's a lot of time for that character to sort of, you know, reappear and for it to build and build and build. So, you know, whether or not you – I get the same way if I listen to myself do something like that. Was not – I know what I wanted to do, and I feel like I either didn't – I went too far into it or didn't go enough. But I think you – I think you establish a really good baseline that you build off of, and then it grows from there.
Well, thank you. You didn't let me finish. I was going to say I'm really amazing. So
oh, then forget everything I said.
That's actually fine. That's fine. No, it's funny is that by the end of it, I thought to myself that it was just the beginning of Kevin. It was the first time I had heard anything or read anything of Welcome to Night Vale. I hadn't listened to any episodes at that point. Podcasts were so new, and I knew that Jeffrey and Joseph were doing a podcast, but I didn't really know what it was, and I spent so much time listening to music. I used to make a joke with Jeffrey all the time about how Jeffrey hated music because he never listened to music, and I was always like, I'm always listening to music, and that's what I listen to when I have on my iPod, which is what it was at the time. And Jeffrey was like, oh no, I never listen to music. And I said, all right, cause you hate music, enjoy. So I never listened to the show, even though my friends were making a show. And so when I read it, I was like, okay, this is so weird and so fun. And as I listened to Sandstorm, I thought, oh, I had no idea what the F I was doing. I had no idea. I had no idea what was – I mean, you know, I have done millions of audiobooks at that point, but I just was not – I think I also wasn't aware that Kevin was going to become a thing. So I just was like, you know, let me try to tell this story the way I can tell this story. So, I mean, it was nostalgic. It was nice to listen to. I remember driving over to Williamsburg to record it at Joseph and Meg's place, and that was pretty cool. I remembered that day, and I remembered – it was like December, I don't know, November or December, and I drove over and did the recording and did one take and left.
That's a very Joseph thing to have happen. It's just like, yeah, we got it.
That's fine.
We got it.
I like to pretend that that's because we're all so talented that we're just like one take ponies, you know, but yeah. Just because Joseph is like, yeah, that's right, y'all.
And then but then something happened to a file, and Joseph asked me to come back.
Oh,
did you know about this?
No.
What?
He lost one of the files, he lost something, and I had to come back and record a section again.
That's also very Joseph.
Did you get any direction from Joseph? Because I remember asking him for it, not getting any the first time I did that live show where you were there. That's when I first met you, was at the debate.
Yeah.
Did you get any direction? Like, what was the ask process like? Who went out to you? What was described to you? And then what direction were you given?
Oh, this is funny. Okay, so Jeffrey wrote to me to say you remember this thing that me and Joseph were doing? We wrote this character. His name is Kevin. We'd love for you to do it. It's coming out. It's a part of a double episode, and he's Cecil's double. And would you be interested? And of course, my response was like, yeah, of course I'm interested in your little show. And so that was it. And then when I got to the apartment, I just read it, and Joseph did not ask me for direction. Joseph did not give me direction. And also, Hal, I don't know if you've met me, but I would never in a million years ask for direction.
Oh, no, never. Never do I think you would ask. I know you know everything. But I mean, I'm just wondering if there was anything like, you're going to play Kevin, and this is what we were thinking. Because I got none of that.
Oh, no. That never, no. Of course I never.
I just want a breadcrumb trail. Give me one breadcrumb, and then I'll figure out where to go from there.
Yeah. No. I don't think you, no one's getting any of that. Well, I think it's, they're word-focused dudes, you know? I think maybe a little bit more now there's some of that thought, but really it was like, we will be bringing to the table the story, and you will be bringing to the table the acting. And that is
Make a choice.
We've brought our words. Now you can please eat them. So,
And that is how I took it. I mean, and I also was used to working with Jeffrey as a Neo, so there was hardly ever any direction given unless we were on our feet and we were just completely off the mark. Right. So one of the joys about doing Night Vale is that for me was knowing these two guys and knowing how they write and being able to take a deep breath and just dive in and do it for better or for worse, which to me, looking back on that first episode, as I said, was sort of like, oh, that was kind of for worse. Even though it was, at that point, we didn't know that Kevin was evil except for from Cecil's reaction to Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After having seen him in the vortex, you know? I mean, Kevin's not evil. Okay.
He's maybe a victim of his circumstances.
Certainly. Yeah. He is. Yes.
I guess
that's
if if you're raised in a society where it's totally normal to have blood all over stuff and to have that's the way you're going to be, you know?
Yeah.
Now Kevin is he's a beloved character, obviously, because you're amazing. You're welcome. What do you think about you? I know you've seen cosplay. I know you've seen cosplay of Kevin and whatnot. What do you think of people's, affections towards Kevin? What do you think about that?
Okay. So I know this is you just asking because you already know the answer to this. You know, I fucking love it. I love it with my entire heart. I love it with every fiber of my being. When I went on tour for that 1 week with you guys, and all of you were like, I'm pretending to smoke a cigarette, everyone. You were all just sort of like over it. You'd been on tour forever. You'd been with each other forever. It was just a lot, and you were just ready to be done. And that was the week, if you recall, that was the week of my life when I won an Obie Award.
Right.
And said to myself, you know what? I'm not going to stay in New York and get the Obie Award. I'm going to go on tour with Welcome to Night Vale. Because all I could think was, oh my God, I'm going to see people who are dressed like what they think Kevin looks like. And I'm going to sign autographs and I'm going to get to read a script on the stage in cities that aren't my home city.
No one was cosplaying Kevin at the Obies.
No, well, nobody thought they were, but they were. That was the same Obie ceremony, by the way, where Hamilton won their Obie.
Oh,
and they were and Lin-Manuel was cosplaying, was wearing a bow tie and shorts.
Boom.
And was cosplaying Kevin R. Free. Not the character Kevin, but the person.
Right.
That's right.
But still covered in blood.
Yeah. I should forward you. We have in our Good Morning Night Vale email account and voicemail account, we have a lot of emails that talk about how much they love you. So I should forward you those voicemails and emails.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Because, I fucking love it, as I said before. Yeah.
There's whole factions of people that prefer, are Strex lovers versus, Night Valians. And I just love it. They're just, they're obsessed. They're obsessed.
It's so funny. There was one Halloween where I got so many pictures of people cosplaying Kevin. It was really cool. And I used to save them all on my phone. But I always respond when people tag me in their pictures of their cosplay and that kind of stuff, because I really do love it. And my favorite story was in Boston at Berklee College of Music, where it was one of our last shows. there was a person on the second row that I knew loved Kevin because they were dressed as Kevin. And I waved, and they freaked out at the end of the show. And then after the show, Symphony, remember you and I were the only ones who did autographs that night?
Yeah. It was like
the last show.
Because I'm also an attention whore.
Yeah, me too. I do that too, Kevin. Every time I'm like, are we going out? Who's going out? We're going out now? I know it's intermission, but should we go out now? I'm going to go sit in the front row and see if anybody says hi.
I carry Sharpies in my breast pocket. So we went out, Symphony and I went out, and this person came running over and hugged me and was crying and was saying, you know, you have no idea what you mean to me. You have no idea. You have no idea. And I said, hey, listen, I'm just older than you. I'm just like you. I had my issues and I finally came out and all is good and you will be well and that will be great and blah, 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 blah. And they just kept crying. And then we took a picture together. I said, you know, my rule, if you take a picture with me, is that you have to tag me in the photo so that I can say hello when you tag me, you know. So I said, do you have Instagram? And they didn't have Instagram. And I said, do you have Facebook? And they had Facebook. And I said, okay, so just go over to my page on Facebook and post the picture. And, you know, and I got a message on Facebook from them that said, I was given permission to post this picture here. I met Kevin at the show in Boston. And I wrote and said, I manage this page because it's me. Only, you know, I'm working on it, but I have maybe 400 likes on that page. So it's all, and then it was many fewer. Anyways, so that's my favorite story. So I love the cosplay and I love the people. And, you know, my whole life, I grew up thinking that I wanted to be famous or whatever that meant. And so, Dolly Parton once said, famously, because she's famous, Regis Philbin asked her, you know, do you mind when the people ask you for autographs and all that kind of stuff? And she said, no, I always wanted to be famous. I'm not going to bitch about it now. And that is a thing that resonated with me at the time and still does, even though, I believe that I am famous, but I've believed that since I was 15.
Right.
I actually like it. I like knowing people who don't know me, but think they do. And I like knowing people that I don't know, even though I think they know me, if that makes sense.
Hopping off of that, when did you know that this show was going to be something you would be famous for? Because you'll be identified, you know, as much as you've done and will continue to do, this is always going to be the way a large number of people know you.
Yeah.
When did you know, I can only imagine that excitement of like, oh, I'm in this. This is now huge and I get to be a part of it. What was that moment for you?
There have been several moments, but so when it was released on March 13th, 2013, mm-hmm. that first Sandstorm episode. And, it came and went. And then that was the summer that BuzzFeed, I think, talked about Night Vale. And then all of a sudden I got all of these followers on Twitter. I mean, I was already at like 2,000 or something. And then the next thing I know I'm at 5,000. And I thought, what is going on? And then somebody mentioned that it was in a BuzzFeed article. And then, that was how it started. And now every week there are a bunch of people who will follow me, and I either know that it's audiobooks, I know when it's from audiobooks, like when authors start to follow me, or other people who are talking about audiobooks will follow me. And then when they are young people with pictures of anime, never pictures of themselves, with like anime avatars, you know, so I know then, and then there have been moments where I have been wearing a Night Vale t-shirt or a hoodie or my bowling shirt, and kids run up to me with their parents to say something to me that, well, they, what they say is, oh my gosh, are you a fan of Night Vale? Because they've probably either never seen a black fan or somebody as old as I, someone in his mid-40s, wearing a Night Vale shirt. And I say, yes. And then I always say, well, I say, are you a fan? And they say, yes. And I say, well, I'm Kevin. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. And then they go, oh, you're Kevin? Before that, I think I knew that it was the biggest moment was when I, when Jessica Nicole told me that I had to get a Tumblr. Mm-hmm. Because there was a Tumblr post that was going around that had all these pictures of me in it. And it was like a, it was like this crazy collage of pictures of me. And the text said something like, look at this face. Look at that dimple. Look at it again. This, my friends, is the voice of evil. on Night Vale. And this post was like, had been shared so many times. And Jessica said, Kevin, you have to join Tumblr because none of them could believe that you were this voice because of all these pictures. And I joined Tumblr and couldn't get my name on Tumblr. I had to lobby the person who had kevinrfree.tumblr.com for months to get my name. So that was I think that was by far the biggest moment. Now those moments are kind of old hat. There are several Kevin R. Frees on Instagram and on Twitter. I don't know. It's cool. You know, because I'm still me and they're still them.
What did you have to do to get it?
That's none of your business. I just had to ask. I just had to send several messages. That's all.
Please, they, let me be me.
Because they weren't using it.
Oh, okay.
Whoever it was wasn't even they using were just it.
Sitting on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Cecil had a lot of trouble when he finally joined Twitter trying to get his name, and he doesn't even really quite have his name.
He's no.
At Cecil Baldwin. I. And then there was one person whose name is like at real Cecil Baldwin, and Cecil messaged them and was like, you have a real interesting definition of real.
Yeah. There's a Kevin R. Free official that doesn't really tweet like he used to either. But
no, that's y'all, that's why I had to claim all my shit like immediately. Cause I was like, no, I am the one and only. Except there's someone in Florida,
oh, yes.
But they have to like add initials. So suck it, you.
Not only do I have my Hal Lublin everywhere, but I have Hal Lubin because that's the most common misspelling of my name. Just in case.
Really?
Yeah. If you go to twitter.com/Hal Lubin, it's an account that I created that says, this is a misspelling of my name. Please go to Hal Lublin.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There is a guy who has the email address, who has my name without my middle initial email address.
Okay.
And people have often written to that person, and that person every once in a while will forward like 15 emails to me from people who have emailed him. And his name isn't Kevin Free. His name is, I don't know what his name is, but he chose Kevin Free because of the famous hacker, Kevin Mitnick, who was in prison, and people
what?
Were, there were all these things. Yeah. There were all these things on the internet for freeing Kevin Mitnick because he was a famous hacker.
And that's how you got your stage name, Kevin R. Free.
That's how I got my stage name. Kevin Mitnick.
Kevin Mitnick.
Once I finally get on the stage, I'm going to use Mitnick. Once my career takes off.
Didn't the actual Kevin Mitnick accept your Obie Award for you while you were on tour?
He tried. He tried it.
Wearing the V for Vendetta mask?
Yes.
I'm here to accept this award on behalf of Kevin.
It was a brown paper bag on his head.
Yeah.
The unknown Kevin.
This is a question we like to ask guests on our show is that, yeah, we were saying that this episode aired back in March of 2013. So what was your life like back in March of 2013?
Yeah, I was in Portland, Oregon, doing Clybourne Park at Portland Center Stage. I was having a great time. It was a great production, and I loved being in Portland, Oregon. I mean, you've been there, right?
Yeah. It's great.
No,
lots of food.
I want to go.
Lots of coffee. It was really, really cool. Yeah, that was it. I remember telling people that I was working with, and I'm on this podcast, and it the episode came out today, and they were all like, oh, huh, great.
Little did they know.
Little did they know. I love telling actors who are too cool for school that I do this podcast called Welcome to Night Vale, because most of those people who do theater, I'm trying not to talk shit about anybody, but there are people who we're also insular in all of our worlds, you know, and which is why I try to do a little bit of everything. But so they'll often say, some of them will say, oh, you're on the podcast. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, good for you. You know, and then whatever.
Yeah.
And then almost always those people who are kind of whatever about it will hear about Welcome to Night Vale and can come back to me and say, Kevin, did you know that podcast that you're on, that Welcome to Night Vale thing? It's huge. Did you know that it was huge? And I said, my friends are doing really well. it's great.
Yeah. It's like, wow. I get that reaction sometimes too. People don't know what it is. And they're like, did you know? You're like, yeah, I knew, but I wasn't going to be like, listen, everyone, I do something that's very big and very important. I'm not a jerk. Right. Like apparently you would be in that situation.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So there was one person that I was working with, and he was kind of a jerk who was really kind of a jerk about it when I said that I was doing it. And then when he came to me to tell me that it was huge, I was giggling because this person I was working with had done like this huge, he had a huge role on Oz for a few years. And now he doesn't do a lot because he's not a nice person, I think. He's one of the ones that it caught up to. And so when he said to me, I was Googling that show, that podcast thing, and it's so big, Kevin, it's huge. Did you know that? They're going to be in Louisville after we leave here. Did you know that? And I said, yeah. Yeah, I did. It's pretty cool. It's pretty great. I think I'm joining them at the end of their tour, as a matter of fact. He said, wow, that's wow. Yeah, asshole. Anyways.
You're like, eat it, jerk.
I always like to get to break it to people in established theater that the live podcasting is changing the way that live theater is done.
Yes.
It's always fun to get to be like, oh, this thing that, you know, it was dying with the blue hairs is now living with the turquoise hairs, you know? Like.
I think you mean turquoise.
Turquoise or lavender or
yes,
lavender. Yeah, the purple hairs is who it's going to live with.
That it's so true. It's so true. And Night Vale has changed my life in such a positive way. I mean, I think I, as along with wanting to be famous, I also kind of want to be an educator of some sort, a role model of some sort. And I want, you know, I mean, I grew up always thinking that I was weird. And I, as an adult, I often feel like I'm pretty weird because I have weirder tastes than most 49-year-old black men who make a living as an artist, you know? And so when I, yes, I'm 49. I look good, right?
You look so would not believe good. It.
Anyways, thank you. Say that.
They can hear.
I'm picking my nose. But I always felt like I was kind of weird. Like so I feel like if there were people who wanted to look up to other weird people, I say look no further than Symphony Sanders and me.
That's right. Oh, wow.
Yep. And also Hal Lublin.
Thank you.
Well,
thank
Kevin, you. I've always looked up to you. I mean, Kevin R. Free, everyone, is the person, is the reason I'm on this phone call today, is the reason that I know any of these people. Kevin R. Free hired me for my internship with the Neo-Futurists in 2008. He was the one who responded to my email being like, hey, weird girl, you can come work for us for free.
And I mean,
you, changed the whole trajectory of my life and brought me and all the Night Vale people together. So, Kevin, it really is you. You're the father of modern day Meg.
Whoa. Other than father of modern day Meg.
Yeah.
You and Jack Bashwinner.
You and Jack Bashwinner. Seriously, you hired me. Brought me to my theater company. What's been my theater company for the past 10 years. I met my husband there. I met all of my artistic collaborators there. Just because you said yes. You took a chance on a strange young girl.
A strange young girl who is hugging a llama in a picture.
Wait, did you send that picture?
Yeah, with my with my cover letter and resume, I sent a picture of me hugging a llama. With also, I had a blow up sex doll in the picture.
That's true. That's all of that. I think I blocked out the sex doll, but because it probably had lady parts, right?
Well,
sorry, I blocked those out. I just pretend like they don't exist. I'm a homosexual.
What?
Gold star, shut up, pal. You're into me. You're not gay, but you're into me.
It's true. I can't help it.
I mean, I'm into you pretty hard as well.
Yeah. Oh,
which one? The left one or the right one?
I can't. Why? Don't make me pick. Don't make me pick. Why would you do that to me? It's just making it because more torture.
You've got that salt and pepper going nowadays. I'm into it.
That's right. I've got everything you put on your steak. It's all in my head.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Wow, I'm really glad that we got here.
You know, eventually all roads lead to sexy talk from Kevin Arfrey.
Yeah,
but not with children, not with children. Anyways, Meg, yes, I just want to follow up on what you said. Yes, I emailed you and brought you in, but you did everything else. You excelled at being Meg and being, you were a technical collaborator for a while, and you're a real success story. You did all of the things, you listened, and then you worked, and then you were like, BT Dubs, I'm a writer, and I'm brilliant at it. And so you became a neo-futurist. So that, I didn't know when we pulled you in that you were a writer as well. I didn't know that. And, you know, when you volunteer for a company like the Neo-Futurists, when you volunteer for any company that is a so-called successful company, the people who are part of the company don't recognize right away the kind of talent that we bring in, that we ask people, the people who come in and do things for free, we often don't know what kinds of sacrifices they're making to their own talent just to work for us. If that makes sense. They're not sacrificing to their talent, you're sacrificing for our work till they get to a point where they blossom. And you did that and stayed with the company. A lot of those people come in and they're like, you know what? I shouldn't be working for them. I should be working for me. And they go somewhere and they do their own thing, which is just as valid a path. So yeah, I pulled you in, but you stayed in. After I pulled you in, I only lasted a couple of years.
Well, you were a great teacher, though. I mean, like, it was, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to stick around is because I saw the work that you were making, and I was like, you know, this is a place where things like this can happen. So, and wow, things I didn't know could happen. And yeah, you were out there making art, and you were just, yeah, you were very kind to someone who is starting out in the arts, and you were this seasoned professional, and you were really, really nice and always willing to show some kids the ropes, and I appreciated that.
Wow. Thank you. You're welcome.
This is our love fest, our love for Kevin Arfrey. We're coming towards the end of our special time together with Kevin. Kevin, is there anything that you want to talk about or any projects you have coming up that you would like to shout out to an audience or political statements you care to make?
Oh, God, political statements?
No, you don't have to make any political statements, but if you have anything that you want to promo.
I'm a Black homosexual. That is a political statement. Can I plug a couple of things?
Plug all your things. Go for it.
Me and one of my main collaborators, Evan Hartso and I, made a thing called Becky's Through History, which is kind of a web series and also it will end up being a panel discussion. Anyway, it is a series of satirical videos in which we explore the problematic relationship in American history between white women and people of color. And it is really, really funny. We're releasing it sometime this fall. So stay tuned for that. And I think the only thing I have to say is the only other thing I want to plug, which is not going to make me any money at all. But I just want to say that this week I am shooting my first sitcom ever. I'm going to have a small part on Murphy Brown.
What? That's awesome.
And it's really exciting because, you know, it's fucking Murphy Brown.
Yeah.
And I'm totally not here for all the reboots of the old shows because it feels like let's make TV great again, which kind of is bothering me. But
yeah.
I feel like if Murphy Brown is going to troll a president the way she did Bush and Quayle back in the day, then I can be here for this.
Is your scene with her? Is your scene with Candy Bergen?
My scene is with all of them.
Kevin!
Yeah, they're having a private conversation and then I pop up with something and give it to them.
That's going to become recurring. It'll be recurring. I'm calling it right now. That will be
thanks,
recurring.
Al.
Yes.
I'm hoping. It's episode 5 of the new season. So it starts on September 28th. Count 5 Thursdays after that.
Wow.
Or 4.
Thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Next week, it's Poetry Week. And we will hear from Night Vale listeners about their theories, questions, and comments. Could mean you. So stay tuned to that. But until then, good morning, Desert Bluffs. Good morning.
Good Morning Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwinner. It is edited by Grant Stewart. It is mixed by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our guest this week, Kevin R. Free. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com. to share your theories and ask questions, or to tell us how your double killed you. For more information on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Night Vale Chat. Special thanks to Christy Gressman, Jeffrey Craner, Joseph Fink, and Adam Cecil. Today's adverb is doubly. We are using doubly for a second time, but this time not as the adverb in this sentence.
They say you shouldn't meet your heroes. I'm Joseph Fink, and I'd like to introduce you to I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats, the show where I meet my hero and have conversations about songwriting, art, and life.
This podcast is going to be weird for me because I'm proud of what I do, but I always try to change the subject if people tell me that my stuff is good.
I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.